This is a recording from Reunions Weekend 2011 at the University of Virginia, made possible by the UVA Alumni Association. This session is the Class of 2006 panel, which features advice from alums from previous years.
So, for those of you who are coming in, this panel is basically a chance. We've invited a lot of alumni who have diverse kinds of experiences to come back and talk to us about what they wish they knew when they were 5 years out. So class of 2006, I'm 5 years out. We're doing a lot of changes. We're going to be moving, relationship changes, different careers and stuff like that. So we invited them, because they have all these different kinds of experiences, to offer their tips, like what are pitfalls to avoid, that kind of thing. Additionally, it's important to that we make this kind of more interactive. I know I talked to them before, to make sure that they're answering questions that you guys actually care about. I'm going to try to do kind of a little survey, so if people aren't considering moving careers, I'll ask a question about it, raise your hand if you are, and then we'll answer questions about that. That way we don't talk about for 20 minutes on something that no one has actually considered. But I think overall people are doing a lot of thoughts on their lives and changes like that. So without further ado, I think we'll introduce, first we'll go through the topic, different topics. How many people here have considered living abroad at some point in the next future? Okay, so a sizable number. Excellent. How many people are considered having a family at some point in their lives? What about, for example, moving back to Charlottesville or becoming more active in the university community at some point in your life, either now or retirement? How many people have considered becoming an entrepreneur or running your own business? Excellent. Okay, great. So all these topics are things that people are doing. So great. Everyone's cool. So we'll go ahead and introduce the panelists. First, we have Anne-Marie Angela. She graduated in 2001. She's currently getting her PhD in history, has been studying in Cairo for the last year and a half, and is now studying in Belfast, Ireland, before moving back here. She also used to work for the Colbert Report. So many different interests. Next is Tim O'Hara, graduated in 1996. He's a managing director of the Advisory Board Company in Washington, D.C., and has two daughters. Next is Holly Stansel, graduated in 1996, mother of three, married a fellow who, and moved back to Charlottesville 5 years ago. So she can even talk about that some. And finally, Reggie Agarwal is the CEO of Cvent, a large software company in Washington, D.C. He wants to talk about entrepreneurship and that kind of thing. I was already in trouble.
I'm just walking by.
Thank you. There's the Pepsi. Thank you.
I was so afraid I was in trouble 5 minutes in. I guess one thing, just to get people acquainted with the panel, we'll go through and maybe just talk about your experiences at UVA, and one thing, maybe one thing you did at UVA that had a significant impact later on in life, because I know you guys did a lot of different things here, and just to maybe go down and say how they affected you. So, Anne-Marie, if you want to start with this.
Sure. I guess for me, actually being... I'm sure some people in this room were. Being a part of the guide service at UVA was really important to me in terms of like a lot of my long-term friends, but also just getting comfortable and confident in public speaking and eventually working in comedy a little bit. It helped a lot to have had really awkward moments on tours that you just sort of dealt with. And that helped a lot when I was running around the Colbert Report doing goodness knows what for the show.
Similar token, I love the fact that at UVA I did a lot of activities that pushed me outside of my own comfort zone, whether that was a debating society or writing for a student newspaper. And those experiences, I think, were formative and gave me confidence later in life to do those same sorts of things, whether it was professionally or personally.
I was heavily involved in my sorority while I was here, and graduated, didn't think another thing about it until we moved back to Charlottesville, and have since become an advisor. And it's sort of mind-bending to be raising my own small people and then getting emails about all sorts of important and non-important sorority business. But it's great. It's been a great way to, I feel like I'm giving back to the university community, but I also have lots of 21-year-old friends, which is it's a nice duality.
I used to be very involved in student council, and so when I used to run for office, running a political campaign is like running a business. So it was definitely great training when you're running for office and having the confidence to meet people and shake people's hands and then stand up for what you believe for. But supposedly you have to have a vision, and so the same thing when you run a business. So it was very helpful when I started doing that.
Excellent. Now that once we kind of know more about the panelists, if anybody ever has any questions, raise your hand. I guarantee you're not interrupting at any point. We want to try to make this interactive as possible. If you guys want to chime in on something someone else just said, make it a rowdy little panel over here. So I guess the first thing we'll open off with the main question of the whole panel. So if we'll just also go down once and talk about one specific thing you wish you'd known when you were 5 years out of school. So something that we can all take away, like one sentence, and then maybe explain the story behind why you believe that.
For me, I guess being the youngest member of the panel, 5 years ago, I wish that I had known that really you're just getting started in what you're doing in life, and it only gets better, I think, in your late 20s. I remember coming here at my five-year reunion. I had just started grad school. I felt in between. I wasn't 100% sure that was what I was supposed to be doing, and finding that like a lot of my friends were feeling the same thing. And now, you know, especially this reunion so far that we've seen each other, it's been worlds different. Like, you sort of hone in more on who you are, like what you want your life to be like in terms of relationships, careers, all that kind of stuff. So that's an encouragement to say that I think your late 20s are kind of a really exciting time.
Wait, so how did you learn that? Just kind of, did you realize that?
Yeah. After my reunion in 06, I did a screenwriting course in New York for a couple of weeks. I just needed a complete break from grad school, wanted to try something very different, something more creative, and I ended up from that loving it and had a friend who was working at the Colbert Report, and so I gave it a shot and really decided that, you know, I'm going more into TV and film stuff now. So just kind of taking a chance when it seemed a little odd to be 5 years out and be interning on a television show, but it made all the difference for me for the long run.
Let me amplify that a little bit. In my experience, no one ever figures out what they want to be when they grow up. Mm-hmm. And that awareness was at about 5 years out was scary. But what I learned and the advice I got was to begin to think about your life in 2-year increments, little chapters, and to make the most of those 2 years, to get the most learning and enjoyment out of those 2 years. To give a little thought to the long term, but not to stress over it, not be anxious about it. I spent a lot of time anxious about what I was going to be when I grow up, and I have found that I still don't know, and imagine I'll have a lot of different stories to tell my kids, but when I internalized that, I just felt newfound calmness and actually direction in what I was doing.
Wait, so why 2 year increments? Where did you come up with that?
You know, it's worked for me. It's about the length of most graduate programs. It's about the length of time I've ever had a job. Most relationships before I met my wife. It's been a good time for me.
Well, I think also my answer was I'll have to come up with a new one because I was in that same vein. I think when I was still working, I felt you sort of have to let yourself off the hook for a while, even if it's just to say, for this next 2 years, I was going to say 6 months, but I'm going to do what I'm doing, and I'm going to do it the best I can do, and I'm not going to be worried about the big picture. And then in 6 months, I'm going to pull up, and I'm going to say, all right, where are we headed here? So I think there's a lot to be said for, and I also think when life becomes more complicated and you're working with a spouse who has a career and needs to relocate, and you're thinking about raising a family and that sort of thing, it's almost sort of easier, you know, if you know that you want to be a pediatric neurosurgeon, then great, like you know what your path is. But I think it's sometimes been harder to say, okay, but for the next 3 years, I'm going to start a family and I'm going to relocate for a spouse and that sort of thing. So in some ways, it's sort of freeing to let your path be sort of more organic as it goes. And the other thing I would say, I think looking back to when I was 5 years out of school and still working, the shift that was really hard for me to make was to go from, you come out of college where it's all about you and what you accomplish, and your first couple years of work are all about you and what you can do. And, you know, the next 5 years then sort of become, there's a lot to be said for being the team player or the manager who helps other people accomplish their goals, and so it's not so much about you anymore, but the person who's really going to go far is the person who can build success for other people. And I think that's, it's hard to sort of give up the, it's all about me and my number. It becomes, you know, the people around me, are they happy? Are they contributing? And I think that's an interesting shift for the next little phase.
So I agree with everything all three of them said, but I'm going to take a little controversial view. So my view is, you kind of have to look at everything kind of in 10 or 20 years in increments. So, because you kind of figure out where you want to go, and everything you should do should move towards that. Now, you may not know what that is, but the earlier you figure it out, the better you're off. So this is the analogy I give. You know, when you're, if you know that you want to go to UVA, it's better to know it when you're 15 or 14 rather than when you're 17 and you're retaking your SATs or your GPA is not as good as you want it to be, right? So the same thing is, so you can do the things you need to put in place. So if, and that's difficult to do that, and that's the journey you have to go through, is maybe these two-year increments to figure that out. But the quicker you kind of have a view of what I want to do in 10 or 20 years, you know, kind of my view is everything's kind of noise around it until you, if, but what matters is getting there. Now, again, it could be personal, having a family, it could be professional, but I think too many people don't take a 10 or 20 year view. So for example, when I started my business, I had a 10 or 20 year view on it because it takes 10 or 20 years to build a business. So I had to make sure that that's what I wanted to do, and then that's what kind of made me take the first step. So I think you do have to go through these things, but as you get older and more mature, then hopefully you will at some point be able to figure out what you want to do and just move towards that.
I feel like I kind of know what I want to be in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Like how do you, but I couldn't begin to say where I would want to be in 10 or 20 years. Like how do you figure that out?
You know, it's different for everyone. You know, there's an old saying, I'm sure a lot of you've heard it, but that people say that if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So that's to the ultimate goal is to get a career where you really have a passion for it and you really like it. And that's a difficult thing to do. So a lot of people, like I graduated from the comm school, then I went to law school. And I enjoyed being a lawyer, but it wasn't my passion. And I looked at the partners in my law firm, frankly, and said, I don't want to be them. It was that was my analysis. It's like, they're X amount of old, I don't aspire to be them. So then my thing is, how do I change my journey? Because that's not where I want to be 10 or 15 years from now. So then I said, well, what does excite me? And I said, entrepreneurship. And so how do you figure that out? You know, it's difficult. It's a personal thing for everyone. But if you can find what gives you passion, then that's what makes you, you know, happy, then whether you make money or whatever, it doesn't matter, because that's what gets you excited, and that's actually the most important thing in life, is to keep it interesting.
Yeah, so like less what I want to do and more like who I want to be, kind of thing?
Yeah, I think you could say that.
I did.
Yes. I have a question.
Yes, do you?
do you, when you were like figuring out your 10 or 20 year plan, like did you ever decide, oh wait, like, This is actually not what I want to do. Like you're saying, in 20 years I want to be this like big time lawyer, and like 2 years into it, you're like, actually this really sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks everything. Like what would you do?
So we recruit a lot of young people into my company. So I a lot of mass advice. So the first thing, a lot of people, and there might be many lawyers or law students here, I'm sure there are. So a lot of people end up going to law school for the wrong reasons, you know, or go into some type of grad school. I personally talked to Professor Wheeler. You guys remember Professor Wheeler? I said, you have ruined so many people's careers because you make law seem so fun. And yes, any lawyer, and they'll come to you, and they'll say, it's not what Professor Wheeler does in comm law. And so many people choose a career on it. And I said, I'm bitter at you because I took your class and I became a lawyer because it was so fun. But it's really not. So I think a lot of people use a lot of false data to make decisions on what they want to do, whether it's just, oh, my uncle's a lawyer, or, you know, I was on the debate team in high school. I was on the debate team in high school. I decided to be a lawyer, number one, because in high school I was on the debate team. I said I want to be a lawyer, and I became tunnel vision. But the point is that as you're going through, make sure you're using the real sets of data. Like, are they just a friend told you and you liked one professor? Don't put a 50-year career because you liked one class, right? So then when you're going through that, how do you come up with that plan? I mean, you have to be at the right point. For me, you know, I went to law school. I even got a post-law degree.
Right.
I practiced for 5 years. I was 29 years old. It's very tough to throw that away and then change directions. But I realized very quickly this is not where I want to go, and so I had to find another direction. So some of it's necessity. Some of it's you know what you want to do. Some of it's you kind of know what your passion is, and then you kind of create that plan based on that.
I like that. So we have a bunch of different kind of general philosophies, and I think we'll start to kind of dive into the different decisions a lot of people make in the next 5, 10, 15 years, and then we'll try to circle back and see if any of those opinions have changed. So one of the first things, I know a lot of people are talking about moving from where they are, relocating cities, either for careers or otherwise. How many people here currently live in what they would like count as a city? And how many people live more in the suburb? Okay. And how many, does anyone live out of the country? cool. Okay. I guess for the panelists, where do you guys currently live? How long do you live there? How do you decide? When is it a good time to move? What are the benefits over the next 5 years? That just explore how important your living location is to the next 5, 10, 15 years. For that, like,
I married a fellow 96 grad. His career initially took us to Denver for a year, which was an adventure. We knew no one. We had one car. We went everywhere together. It was great. Other than moving 3 days after the wedding, which I don't recommend, it was actually a really nice way to start because it was the two of us against the world. And it was great. I grew up in Maryland. I had never ventured anywhere off the East Coast for any period of time, so it was fun to have a little experience, and then we very quickly had a reason to move back to D.C. You know, for us, 5.5 years ago, we were both working in D.C. I had my first child, I'd gone back to work part-time. Everything was good as long as everything ran perfectly. You know, it was, but if the babysitter was sick, or the child was sick, or I was sick, or Mark was out of town, or you know, it took longer than the normal 45 minutes to drive 5 miles to work. You know, I think it took its toll on us. And so we spent years trying to figure out how to move back to Charlottesville and thought about all sorts of strange routes that would have taken us back here 15 years from now, and just decided finally that this is where we wanted to be. My husband is a lawyer. He's mostly happy about it. But the key was that, you know, he decided to make what he wanted to make of it. So he was working for a big firm in D.C. He said, I'd like to move to Charlottesville and telecommute. And they said, okay. And, I mean, you know, the lesson from that is they never would have said, hey, would you like to move to Charlottesville and work from home? He had to ask for it. And they weren't crazy about it. The asterisk to it is I found out later that most of the way he presented it was that his wife was really unhappy, and if we didn't move to Charlottesville, and I was very uncomfortable as an office person for a long time. You know, he's since changed firms, and you know, found other firms that said, sure, you can live from Charlottesville. And so, for you know, this was a lifestyle for us, and it was a huge change. And I have family here, and you know, our day to day is so much more sustainable. But we would have lived a totally different path if we had stayed in D.C. I would probably still be working part-time, whereas now I'm at home. You know, so it's not just, I think when you get to that point, it's not just a location. It really affects how you spend your time and the quality of life. You know, the other big difference, I've got my husband at home. He's sequestered in his office, but he's home. So for me, being a stay-at-home mom, I don't feel like I don't talk to adults all day. I see him every once in a while, and that makes a difference for us, too. So, you know, where you live, I think, ends up being really, really important.
how is it difficult to adjust to going back to UVA? What kind of, you lived there for 4 years, and all, like how is that different?
Well, it's funny. It's funny how quickly you start to complain about the students. we're like, oh my gosh, we're townies. We have just moved, but we lived a mile past Foxfield, and whenever we had a babysitter, anybody coming out, I hesitated to say we live a mile past Foxfield because I was worried they would think it would take 2 hours to get to our house. It only takes 2 hours one day out of the year. You start to grumble about the students, and you know, you don't go to Harris Teeter at the end of August because all the students are buying large boxes of cereal and things like that. But it's great. I mean, there's a whole world to Charlottesville that has nothing to do with the university, and there are fantastic people who are raising families, and you know, it's a little bit hard to find a job in Charlottesville, but it's a great community. So it's been great, and both my husband and I are fairly involved in some stuff that's going on at the university, but you certainly don't have to be. There's enough here that, you know, that there's a life of its own.
Amory, you've lived in a billion places.
Wow.
Yeah. How do you know when it's time to move, or what's cool about living with them? I guess a lot of people said they wanted them abroad, but not a lot of people possibly know when a kid's lying, which I mentioned. Actually does. How important is it to go do it?
Sure. It really depends on your like perspective and your passion, but I think it's been the most rewarding thing I think I've done since UVA. So I definitely have itchy feet. I hadn't left the country before I graduated from UVA, and I did a UVA program called UK Fellows where I taught in England for what was supposed to be a year, and then I really enjoyed being over there. I loved traveling on school breaks when we weren't teaching. So I ended up staying for almost 4 years. And then there's just so much life in the world to see. So I don't regret it for a second. And then I decided I wanted to go back to school. I applied to grad schools. I got into Duke. So I moved from living in the English countryside and sort of like walking to the market on Fridays to get all my vegetables to like living in Durham, North Carolina, which is a fantastic city, I might say. But at the time that I moved there, I hadn't realized that actually, if you do live abroad, coming home can be more of a shock than actually your initial experience going abroad. I was living with my best friend that I had gone to UVA with, but something in that was still a bit unsettling. But I was at Duke for, like, in Durham for 4 years, and then I got a fellowship as part of my degree to study Arabic abroad. So I definitely sort of pursued the foreign language stuff because I knew it would allow me to go abroad again. And so I moved to Cairo in the summer of 2009. And that's been obviously an exciting time, especially the spring to be there. And I would say, I mean, for me, it's almost like Tim's two-year increment sort of thing. Like, I'm at the end of those 2 years, I definitely feel ready. I'm going to be back in Durham next year, and I'm really excited to be back in Durham for the last year of my program. And I'm sure in about 3 or 4 years' time, I'll probably want to work abroad again. And, you know, if that's kind of your pendulum, I think it's important to pay attention to that. And I have a lot of great friends, especially in Cairo, who were like, I know this is different, I know it's kind of random, but they've also had amazing career opportunities as a part of that, especially given, you know, I have a bunch of friends who are journalists, and given everything that was happening in Cairo this spring, they definitely advanced career-wise, but also just learned and grew a ton, so.
Another thing that a lot of people are talking about are the role of relationships over the next few years. Like, if you have a significant other or are dating somebody, a lot of times that plays a factor in where you're moving, your careers. Tim, if you wanted to maybe talk about like just starting a family and how that plays into, a lot of people have plans and then that kind of like you have to adjust them, obviously.
Certainly. I met my wife at work. We were both at the advisory board company. And we were acquaintances, and decided to move into a group house together with a bunch of other men and women. We became best friends, and towards the end of that first year lease, became more than friends. So we moved out of the group house. Clock thickens. We continue to be employed at the same company, and towards the end of that first year lease, actually took the same job. And so for a little while, we were co-editing a publication that had us commuting into work every day at 4 a.m., doing our thing, and then going back to the group house. I mean, it was pretty intense. But we survived and learned a lot about each other, and I think that formed the basis of what became a wonderful relationship and marriage. But she and I both enjoyed living in D.C., and I think stayed longer because of that. And when we were interested in graduate school, we worked that out together. I went and did my graduate degree for 2 years. She worked, and then she went to graduate school, and I worked. And when we were thinking about having a family, we absolutely factored that into the sorts of people we wanted to be and careers we wanted to have. And she works part-time, 3 days a week, and balances work and home life. But I, too, have made deliberate decisions about the sorts of roles that I wanted to have so that I could achieve the sort of work-life balance that I wanted as well. So it becomes a very important part of how you think about your life and your career, doing that with another person and then family.
What are some rules that I've got?
Yeah, I have a question. So when you went to grad school, did you guys both stay in D.C., and did you make the decision based on each other, or...?
So I have lived in D.C. for ever since graduating, except for those 2 years that I went to Stanford University for my MBA. And Sarah got to determine the schools that I applied to. And then when I got into a few of those schools, we made that decision together. She did her undergraduate at Stanford and had friends and family in the Bay Area, so that was an easy one for her. Then the decision of where to go upon graduation was another decision that we made together. We both felt drawn back to the East Coast, and she got into a great program out here, and I followed her.
We both went to Stanford.
So we both went to Stanford, and she found a new job, and then when she got into a program back out in D.C., I followed her.
What are some maybe rules to like consider when balancing like two different needs? Like how do you keep that? Not like obviously to work together to find a mutual solution. How do you do that?
Yeah, well, geez. I don't know if
Simple.
I can...
Tell us, come on. Here's the answer.
what's important to keep in mind?
We have a deep friendship, and you make a lot of sacrifices, and you can't spend a lot of time figuring out who's right and wrong. You got to really think about each other's needs, and we spent a lot of time talking about maximizing family health. She was an undergraduate economics major, and I was an MBA, so we do spend a lot of time reducing relationship advice to formulas. And so we maximizing family health. There's two of us and two kids and a cat, and you can't, on any one day, you can't maximize everybody's happiness, but you can find an optimal solution that no one's miserable and most everyone's happy, and that sort of motto has kind of got us through a lot.
Well, and I think the example that comes to mind right now, we're building a house, and in the midst of all the many decisions that need to be made, we started quantifying it. So we were talking about a decision, and we had a different sort of knee-jerk reaction about something. I won't even tell you what it is, because it doesn't matter. But, Mark finally was like, so like on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to you? And I said, it's a 6. And he said, for me, it's a 4. And so obviously we can't solve the whole world's problems this way, but I do think there's that give and take. Like, yeah. Mark and I did the same thing of, he's like, I need to move to Denver. You can make the move after that. And, so we were sort of, and that's, I think it's, that goes back to sort of, if your path isn't completely determined, it makes it easier to do that. We're going to do this for you. We're going to do this for me next time. And I think, you talked about being a family health issue. I was just having this conversation with someone who was trying to get their Todd to sleep on a regular schedule. And, you know, you do get to these issues that are really family health issues. You know, the old phrase, like, if mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. That's true for everybody. I mean, if any one person in your household is really in a bad place, then something has to change, even if, you know, if it means everybody just moves towards a medium level of happiness, that's better. And that was largely, apparently I was miserably unhappy in D.C., and that's how we moved to Charlottesville. But, no, that's all part of it. How can we maximize what everyone needs to get done? You know, for us, you know, it was a professional sacrifice for my husband, who, had he stayed in D.C. as a D.C. lawyer, probably would have ended up doing something different than he's doing now. Or he started out thinking litigation was his bag, and we had kids. Traveling and being, you know, somewhere for a six-week trial just was not an option for us. And plenty of people with families would make that work, but it just wasn't what he wanted to be doing and what I wanted him to be doing. And so his practice area is different. He writes appellate briefs, and that's a lifestyle that works a lot better with, you know, seeing the kids most nights before they go to bed. So it's all about sort of meeting in the middle somewhere.
I know we've been talking a lot about change, and something a lot of people are doing are going through career changes. How many people have had, if not a career change, a job change, or more than two job changes since graduation? I know I have. Yeah, okay, so a lot of people. It seems to be in that general range. If maybe we just go down the line and talk about how you know when it's a good time to change jobs, or how you know when it's not a good time to change jobs. I know it's always like a pressure, could I be happier somewhere else, or am I sacrificing something if I leave? So we'll just go down and rejoin.
So I've been in the process of a long-term change. Because I want to go into media, TV, film stuff, it takes a while to have a good income in that kind of field. And so while at graduate school, I've done these different things. I worked at Colbert. I've written a screenplay. I found out 2 days ago I got the rights to adapt this novel that I'd written the screenplay for. So literally, it's kind of all in progress. So for me, I would say give it time. You know, if I had kind of stopped grad school a year into it or 2 years into it, thinking, right, you know, I need to be doing something different, I don't think I would have sort of the outlook that I have now, and I wouldn't have had the opportunity that I'm hopefully having as we speak. So in the sense of I would have jumped into another job, and then I would be doing that job maybe for a year or two and figuring out if that was right. But actually, if you have time, if you're in a career or you have a life that allows you some free time to figure those things out, that would be my encouragement, because it takes off a lot of the stress of doing an immediate job search to move into that next thing, to decide then if you like it or not. If there are other ways to get experience, that would kind of be my advice. So
like a holdover and kind of transition way into it?
Yeah. So that you know that you really like it, and when you make that move, you're gonna be there for a while.
I've spent my entire professional career at one company, the advisory board, but have had four very different careers with this company that has been growing and has afforded me the opportunity to do different things. But because I was sort of thinking about things 1 to 2 years out, I feel like every few years I was making deliberate decisions to either stay in the role I was in or do something different, and usually it was to do something different. And in my 20s, I think that it was balancing my own engagement with the work that I was doing with the desire to learn as much as I could, and that included the time that I was in graduate school. And in my 30s, it continued to be happiness and engagement, but then I started to shift into what were the roles that I could have the biggest impact on the firm and on the clients that we serve. And so those have been my guidelines as I've thought about when was it time to do something different, or was presented with an opportunity to think about, well, is this an opportunity for me to have an even bigger impact on the things that are important to me?
I made a couple moves due to relocation. Ended up for 5 years also at the advisory board company. Tim got me that interview. Thank you
very much. I can report on
and continued to move around there. It was great. And you know, when I decided to, I think the big dividing switch for me was deciding to stop work and stay home and raise children. I actually was still the advisor board when I had my first child, and I really do think I had the best possible situation. I had a boss who was also a working mom. She had busted her butt for years, and she worked it by working 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. every day. She carried a full-time load and worked it, and she said, you can come back, you can take as much time as you want, you can come back in whatever capacity you want. And it was, so I really, she was the most understanding boss that I could have hoped for, but there was still a limit to it. I was a part-time employee, and it was clear I was not going to be promoted in, that I could continue to do good work and I continue to grow, but there was a limit to what I could do as long as I was working part-time. So, I feel like I had it as good as it could possibly be, and yet there were still limits to it. And that was my choice. I could have gone back full-time. And I think I've been very happy since I stayed home. People, you guys are probably too young to read much about the mommy wars, but there's, scores and scores of things written about the battle of the stay-at-home moms versus the working moms. I used to think that was really silly, and I've actually come around. Now, I sort of feel like I sort of understand where everyone's coming from, why there would be any animosity at all. It's that we all feel the need to justify the decisions that we've made. So I have to believe that me staying at home and devoting my time there is what's best for my family and my children. And a working mom has to believe strongly that she's a better mom and a better person and a happier person because she's working. And so I understand why, it's easy to attribute everything that's evil to the people who carry out the decision, when really everybody has a different situation. Like I said, my husband's at home, so my experience is different than other people's. My sister-in-law thinks that I have it easy because my mom lives in the same town where I do. I happen to think that my sister-in-law has it easy because her husband never works on weekends, and so it's everybody has a very different reality. And so there's really no point in comparing sort of the apples to oranges. But it's, I feel like it's the right decision for me, and work might be in my future, might not, and I have to be very zen about this. I'm not really sure what comes next, but, it's all I think about. I think the most important thing is to be confident that what you're doing has the right impact, regardless of what balance you've struck. You need to be happy in that balance and feel like you're doing it for the right reasons that make you happy and your family happy.
You know what? I kind of forgot the question.
I'm sorry.
It was, how do you know when to change jobs or careers, or how do you also know when you don't do that, stick around and grow there?
I'm going to go back to my thing. So if your 10-year goal's here and you're moving this direction, just change it and move that way. That's kind of what I would say. So the earlier you can figure out that 10-year or 20-year goal and just move towards that, if that's and whatever that is, personal or professional.
And Reggie, I know since you're the CEO of your company and you're also an entrepreneur for it, I know a lot of people raised their hand when they thought about opening a business. Maybe you could go a little more into detail about your own careers. Like, how do you know, everybody kind of has these thoughts, but how do you know, I'm going to leave my job, I'm going to sink a lot of my savings into this. Like, how do you go through that process and get the guts to do it, or also realize it's a bad idea?
Yeah, so I give a lot of speeches to, and I mentor a lot of entrepreneurs. So the first thing is that what I tell people is, if you want to be an entrepreneur, it's again, it's like you're picking a new trade, and being an entrepreneur is like a trade. It's like, if you're unsuccessful there, the good thing for a lot of people, for me, it was different because I was a lawyer. If I was leaving it, I really couldn't necessarily apply that back to my profession. So if you're in a profession where you could do that as an entrepreneur, and if it fails, you can go back, my view is you have very, very little to lose because you'll be better. Because running your own business, you're just going to learn more than when you're working, in terms of, you have a different viewpoint than if you, work for somebody in terms of looking how they do. And then when you go back to them, you can understand a little better. And sometimes you can be an entrepreneur by not being the CEO or the founder. You can be maybe the beginning of the company. But I think the biggest lessons I learned is if you want to be an entrepreneur, you have to do it. Too many people talk about it, and this is a classic example. So a lot of people ask me, if I would help them or mentor them, the first thing I go, if you quit your job. And they say, no, I'm waiting. This is a classic example. I'm waiting for my income in my new business to exceed the income in my professional, whatever I'm doing. And I go, well, that's unlikely to happen. That's how most companies fail, because you're waiting for everything here to be perfect when it's just not going to be. And to jump in kind of, head first. So what I say to them is, I'm not going to mentor you until you believe enough in your business. Because until you quit your job and really commit, then it's probably not going to go anywhere. And so that's probably the biggest thing I tell people. If you believe in it, just do it. And, you know, and how do you set yourself up for that? The biggest thing I think people do wrong is they tend to work for companies that don't teach them entrepreneurial things. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, don't work for IBM. Don't work for Booz Allen. Fine, that's not going to teach you an entrepreneur. Maybe work at a smaller company, see how it is, and really see if you want to jump in and learn the skill set to do it. That doesn't mean you can't do it from the other. I'm just saying that it's a different world. And so, but those are probably the two lessons that I learned, is jump in first if you're going to do it, and commit, and realize, by the way, it's going to be a multi-year journey. It's not going to be, you know, just a 6 month or 12 months. It's a 10 or 15 year thing if you really want to build a business.
For example, are people in the class 2006 either too young to start a business, or what steps big for us to be taking at this kind of?
Sure. So there's a lot of people, like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, who starts straight out of college. Yeah. That's not the model I encourage. My view, you know.
Hooray!
Yeah. there's 23 million businesses out there, and very few are actually successful. You know, probably only about 4% of businesses get to us, you know, survive, and then a certain amount make it a certain threshold. But so here's what I would say is, learn on someone else's dime. So when I interview people, like, I come here every year to interview. So we have about 40 or 50 UVA people that work in my company. And what I always tell them is that if you want to be an entrepreneur, I love hiring entrepreneurs. So I'm just like, work for a company like ours. Learn on me. I'll pay you a salary. You'll make mistakes, and I'll pay for them. But I'm getting your entrepreneurial spirit. So my view is, you know, work somewhere, and I would probably recommend 5 to 10 years in the real world. Take those best practices and then start your company. So I wouldn't recommend doing it straight out of school, because you don't know anything. And sure, you get lucky, you might do some things, and I'm not saying there's not a time or a place, but generally it's like, work for other people, pick up best practices, let them pay you to get your MBA. You know, a lot of people call it, you know, the MBA on your show, you know, street MBA. So you're learning, let them pay for it, and then when you jump in, you know stuff about what a sales funnel is. You know the kind of basics about hiring, what not to hire, you know, whatever it may be. So that's probably my biggest advice, is work on someone else and then do it.
When I was coming out of business school, I thought long and hard about entrepreneurship, but it was talking to mentors like Reggie that I decided not to be an entrepreneur. It, for a variety of reasons, it wasn't the right thing for me. But what I discovered is that there are ways to nonetheless be entrepreneurial in the context of larger organizations. Returning back to the advisory board after graduate school, went back in part because I knew that it was a firm whose values and growth trajectory would allow me to be innovative and take an entrepreneurial approach, but as you say, to make mistakes in someone else's dime. I won't have the upside that the classic entrepreneur has, but I don't have the downside. And given my values and what I wanted to do in life, it was the right decision for me. So I might consider those of you who have that entrepreneurial spirit, but for whatever reason don't decide to start your own company, look for organizations and groups and people that you can nonetheless sate that entrepreneurial spirit with.
It's called an intrapreneur. And that's absolutely a course for the majority of people, because when you become an entrepreneur, you have to, you know, when I started the company and things weren't going well, I was going to have to file bankruptcy because I put everything into it, and that's a high risk strategy. So that absolutely is not it's not the right strategy for everyone. So I think exactly right. Being an entrepreneur, the problem is most people don't think that way.
Yeah.
They don't think like this is that every company wants you to be an entrepreneur, and if you do, and you have a reasonable management team, they'll recognize it and promote you so that you know can be on the executive level. And so that's definitely a path that I think is a good path.
Reggie, can you talk about an MBA in the context of an entrepreneurial career? The value of it.
Sure. So here's kind of my thoughts on MBA. One is a good thing for an MBA. A lot of times you don't need to get an MBA nowadays, right? A lot of times it's really if you want to deviate from what you're doing. So if your path is going this way and you're not sure what you want to do, you get an MBA so you can jump this way very quickly. So a lot of people do that. So that's number one. It's a good jumping, you know, springboard to jump into something else. So that's number one. Number two, it's a good place to go to kind of, in my view, when you get your MBA, the goal is if you kind of have an idea where you want to go, so the MBA can enhance that. That's always the best, but most people don't have that. They just go there open-minded, saying, I don't know what I want to do. Maybe when I get an MBA, it's going to teach me that I don't want to go to investment banking, because there's 15 people in my, you know, they're now my best friends, all did investment banking, 14 of the 15 say I don't like it, or they do, you know, I'm just saying. So I mean, I think an MBA is great. I wish I did an MBA for me instead of a law degree, because that was, it gives you the most, you probably have the most paths in grad school, in my view, coming out of an MBA. You can do anything. You can work for a nonprofit and go into that. You can obviously go into a professional career. You know, you can go into consulting, whatever. You can start your own business. So what I like about an MBA, it's a grad degree, which is important for a lot of people to get that. It's a springboard to do whatever you want.
You just said a lot of people. You said, I know it's important for a lot of people, but your view personally, like, do you think it would have been important? Do you wish you would have gotten one, and you think it would have helped your career as an entrepreneur?
You know, it's really a personal question. So it was important for me to get a graduate degree. You know, I'm Indian, so my parents said I had to be a doctor, you know, or an engineer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but no, you have to get a grad degree. It wasn't really an option, you know, in my family. And so, but that's part. But I do think it's a good thing to do if you're not clear what you want to do. If you know what you want to do, it certainly enhances it. But the question is that, you know, 2 years of working versus taking on $150,000 debt, you know, if your parents aren't paying for it or whatever it may be, you know, now the equation is different. And it doesn't necessarily, you know, get you further ahead if you know what you want to do. But most people don't know what they want to do, frankly, 5 years out of school. That's the majority of people. So an MBA helps, you know, give you a better view of what you want to do. That's why I encourage it.
But I think in your case, the law degree was more helpful to you in the business that you're doing now.
Yeah, it depends. It's my wife, by the way. So,
she goes,
yes, tell me more about me. You know. Yeah, it depends. So, you know, about what you do. I don't agree with my wife. I don't think the law degree did help me. But we'll talk offline. No.
No, I think like about, you know, the decisions that you made for your family and how it was right for you. And I think Tim, right, your wife seems like she had to make a similar decision about, you know, how far you want your career to go. And I think, at least for me and being a female, I was in the engineering school here and just being in the university environment, you know, you come out and everyone is very ambitious and it becomes, I think, as you get out of school more, like kind of a struggle. And some things that I talk about with my girlfriends is like, well, we want to have these very ambitious careers, but we also recognize family is important, and we come from this environment and surround ourselves with very successful people that are constantly making kind of judgments, value judgments on like where you're going and if you're moving or having a kid or not working. And I would just, was it a struggle for you to kind of get to the place that you are now, or like, was it a pretty easy decision for you and your wife to make that, and especially being so tied to the university and still in this kind of community?
No, it was not easy, and probably if any of my friends or my husband were sitting here, they'd be laughing at me describing myself as in a zen state, because it comes and goes. Sometimes hourly. No, it's hard. I think you need to look for people who have struck the balance that you want to strike and are doing it successfully.
Yeah.
I did a couple different things while I was at the advisory board, and I was in one role and I liked it. I liked a lot about it. But I looked at the women who were in that department, and maybe coincidentally, but maybe because of the choices that they made, none of them were married. Or the ones who were married were working full time, no one had a family. And maybe those were their choices, but I couldn't look at anyone and say, you know, it's a high travel job, and I didn't see anyone who was doing it the way I wanted to do it. And it doesn't mean that I couldn't have done it. I just couldn't picture it for myself, and I didn't have any example that I could follow either. You know, I've got a classmate of mine who came out of here. She's a principal at McKinsey, as is her husband. They have two or three kids, you know, and I can't comprehend what their daily life looks like. They both work full time, and they run, you know, an office together, but they share an assistant. And this woman must know a lot about their whole life. But she, you know, so when they need to travel, their assistant manages it all, so that they're not both out of town at the same time. You know, and so, like, it's obviously working for them, I think. And it was hard, and I think I've watched many of my girlfriends go through the same thing, and going back to the mommy wars, like, every time I had another girlfriend who decided to stay home with her kids, I was like, yes. it's the affirmation of, like, this is what we've chosen, and it makes sense. And it also changes how you, my best friend in Charlottesville works part-time. and, you know, we can only get together on Thursdays because that's the day she's not working. You know, and so it really does change their daily existence. And I think, you know, for some people, at various points I've had opportunities to think about going back to work, either working from home, you know, on a very part-time basis. I guess that's primarily, and you know, for me, that wouldn't do it. If I were going to go back to work, it would be because I want a social outlet and I want to leave my house and go do something and be surrounded by people. Whereas some people are very happy working 10 hours a week from their home because they just want the sort of mental stimulation. That's not what I would be in it for. And so, you know, it's never an easy decision. And the other thing too is, you don't really get to plan it all either. You know, people who have a very specific timeline about how their life will unfold and when they'll have children, you know, we don't need to go into the details, but it's not always up to you how that all plays out. And so, you know, it is, I think at some point you have to cut yourself a break and be like, this is the right decision now, this is what I'm trying now. And, you know, and leave as many, you know, if you've got a good reputation in the workplace, you leave as many doors open to you so that if you need to take time to focus on family now, you know, the best thing you can do is continue to cultivate those relationships so that you've got something to come back to if you choose to go that route. So, no, I don't think it's easy. I know one person, actually she was my boss when I worked for SNL Financial here in town before I moved away, and she's the most zen person I know. Recently I said, I'll go back to work when you go back to work, Mary, and she said, you're good there. She has no plans. She's a super hard charger, and she has no plans to get back. And it's nice to find people who are so happy and certain that they're doing the right thing, and you sort of surround yourself with some of those very certain people, and you start to feel better. You get more than
yourself. Can I speak to that, too? I want to give a shout-out to all the single people in the audience. to say that I think Holly's point about not being able to really plan all of that is really important to kind of take on board, in the sense that I didn't anticipate still being single when I was 10 years out of school, but that's, you know, that's fine, and that's the way things have worked out. And to realize, like, that the choices you make for this time period are the choices you make for this time period, given all of the constraints that you have. So I would love to be in Holly's position, honestly, in the next 5 to 10 years. And, you know, that doesn't mean that either one of us has different career ambitions. So it's important to kind of, you know, you work with what you have. So.
Since we're going to start wrapping up, I think a fun thing to do would be to go down the line and maybe reiterate that one tip that you started off with, and also maybe pick a thought out of one of the other people, other panelists, that particularly spoke to you, like one little what have you that really said, yeah, that's dead on, the 2-year thing or the 10-year thing, or you know, keeping a balance on family and that kind of stuff. So if anyone, since I know I'm just springing that one on you, if anyone has...
That's a two-part question. Yeah, okay, so our own device,
your own
how
device,
we feel about our
reiterate
that
so you can all remember what it was. And then one other thing that you're like, yep, that's right, I should have added that too. Who has one?
Okay, I'll start. So my advice, my piece after these guys stole my first answer about sort of, you know, the next sort of part of your career, focusing, there's a lot of importance. A lot of your success will come from building success in others. I think that is true forever. You know, now that I'm at home and entering the world of, you know, the PTO and all sorts of things, like, I'm starting to realize actually there's a people who can get things done and work to and run a good committee can find a lot of outlets for themselves and their work. I was working on a fundraiser for the Children's Hospital, and this group of women sort of take their show on the road, and they run a big committee, and they raise a lot of money for cause, and if they're not happy, then they move to another cause, and they raise money there. But they, you know, there are a lot of community organizations that can benefit from people who know how to work with people. And the other thing I would say that just made me think of it, the woman I was just talking about who I worked for here in Charlottesville, she sat me down. I was 3 years out of school, and I had a boss who I thought was worthless, and we had a mutual boss who decided what each of our bonuses were, and I went in to complain because I thought that my boss, who had done nothing on my project, should not be rewarded for having done nothing for my project, which was ultimately successful. And she said, I would feel more sorry for you if you hadn't also been rewarded for this, if you hadn't been handsomely rewarded for your piece of it. And that was a really good lesson for me to learn. I was put out because he was getting rewarded when really, you know, in the end, I was being rewarded too. And so it's that, you know, needing to back off and worry a little bit less about sort of all the stuff that seemed very important and focus on my career path and, you know, those that are coming sort of behind me as opposed to sort of success in the universe. And I think it's a good, you know, this is the time to sort of focus on that more than just the numbers and things. You know, Reggie, in describing Reggie's path, that could never be me. I'm risk averse, and I've never had a 10-year plan, and that's fine. We have all had experience with some of the founders of the advisory board and the corporate executive board who have made many millions of dollars doing what they're doing. And, you know, my conversation is, if I took a company public and made $140 million, I wouldn't go to work the next day. Like, that would be it for me. But those guys do. Right. And that's what's different. That's why I will never be them. Because they go, and the next day start to figure out where the next 140
million. Go kid yourself. They have to. They have to cash out.
But that's, you know, that's fine. That's so I think, you know, you can hear the mindset and be like, all right, I can't do that. And some people do it and do it very well and are very talented, and that's great. And it, you know, I have to sort of abandon those plans for me. It's not worth it.
I would love to have a vision of myself, especially professionally, 10 to 20 years out. But I have never been able to articulate that with confidence. And so I think you give a good advice to the extent to which you can. Grab hold on that vision and bend your life so that you can achieve those things. But I guess the way I would square it with mine is that if you fall into my camp, and that feels like an arbitrary decision, or it creates more anxiety than it does positive energy, then what has worked for me, and I think what has worked for a lot of people I know, is, as I said, just to make the most of what you're given, the time you have, the people you have. And it's not to be cavalier. I mean, I have very definitive plans and goals, but they're 1 to 2 year timelines. It's not the 10 to 20. And that applies to your personal life as well. I mean, I think that's a big part of how my wife thinks about the decision she's made to be part-time professional. It works for her now, and she revisits that on a pretty regular basis. And as our kids grow and our needs change as professionals, I'm certain that she'll make different decisions. And I think Holly gives us some really good advice about when you're making those decisions and you're charting that path forward, to find people who will affirm those decisions. They may not be doing the exact same thing you're doing, but they support the decisions you've made. Because these are difficult decisions, and you'll get a lot of messages from other people that erode that confidence that you've got. So find a few people who will support you and affirm those difficult decisions you've made.
I would say that life is long. You guys are really young. We're all really young in the grand scheme of things. And I think to put too much pressure on any single decision is just, it's not good for you. It's not good necessarily for that choice, because then you come to it with a lot of expectation. And if if you're interested in doing something slightly non-traditional, like going out of the country for a few years to work, or going back to school, taking time out to have a family, all of those things, realize that that's, 10 years from now, that's going to be one part of how you grew, and that it might take you in a completely different direction that you hadn't expected, and that could be really much more fruitful than you know now when you have to make that decision. So trust your instincts and follow what it is you think that you're passionate about, because you don't know 100% for certain while you're making all of those decisions. And then I guess that would kind of go back to Reggie's point about having a 10 to 20 year plan. I don't know that I necessarily would call my life the 10 to 20 year plan, but I do know, broadly speaking, what I'm passionate about and what field I want to be working in 10 to 20 years, and that I see myself having a family. So if I'm moving in the general direction of all of those things, I'm still sort of following Reggie's advice. Just slightly different.
Thank you. Someone likes my 10-year plan. So the advice. So my 10-year plan is kind of mixed reactions too. So I'm gonna come up with this. So I'm gonna say, love what you do, and you'll never work a day in your life. So figure that out, and then you can come up with your 10 or 20 or life year plan. So no, I think one thing I want to stress though, it is important to have a balance. Anyone who has a family, you know, they'll realize that you have to have both, because you know what I always say, the great equalizer is happiness, and you probably have heard something. So you can see poor kids in a country be happy. Because it doesn't matter if you have money, it doesn't matter certain things, just what you perceive as being happy. And what I think you ask anyone who's, as they get older, it's like it's definitely a balance between your family, as everyone's been saying here, and a balance of it. Profession is important, but whatever your priorities are, but to balance them, that's important. And I think one thing, you guys are still young, very few of you probably are married, or maybe you just recently got married or something, but your life will change very much. It's funny, when I went to my class, you know, now my class is a little different than it was at my last reunion 5 years ago. So I'll tell you one thing that was interesting to me is that no one's, in, by the way, I don't view there's a struggle between people who are working or not anymore. I think that was a struggle, and frankly, 5 and 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. For my class this time, my wife and I were talking about, you know, a lot of the, you know, frankly, women who have 3 or 4 kids or whatever, they're at home, and no one views that as a struggle. It's like, that's your decision, great. No one respects it, and there's plenty of reasons that's good. Some people who didn't take that view, and I don't perceive that as being as much conflict, because now people, as they get older, just like, everyone's going to do what they want to do. So, but I do think in 5 years ago at my reunion, there were people that were just starting that balance, especially when they started having multiple kids. So it was kind of interesting to see that. But I think in the end, you have to find that balance, and you know, whatever. Again, that 10-year view isn't just your business life or your professional life. It is your social or your family life, and that's an important thing.
Awesome. So we'll all be happier. I have the big lens on my notes. Happier. That's it. You know, thank you very much.